This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Lefty Pinkos is here to celebrate all things queer and decidedly left of centre.
We took the children from their mothers.
For the pain of these stolen generations, we say sorry.
Each week we'll aim a non-mainstream spotlight to our community and get gritty with all kinds of titillating queer folk.
From artists, activists, freaks, and generally wayward but passionate peeps.
Refugees are welcome here!
News, reviews, and music too.
Hosted by Brian and Kat.
Yes, you're on Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9 with Brian and Emma. It's not Kath anymore. That's becoming a bit of a running joke on the show now.
Yes, it is.
Brian Scott, we've got a really interesting show coming up. We're going to hear from two inductees into the Victorian Aboriginal Honour Roll. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I guess last week, last Wednesday, there was a state government reception for the Victorian Indigenous Honours Roll, and I guess it's been a role that's been established back in 2011, and it's there to celebrate and acknowledge the achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within Victoria who have done amazing things. And so this week on Lefty Pinkos, we're going to feature two voices from, I guess, two inductees from last week's honour roll. And I guess I'll be out there and honest and say, look, it's nepotism shines tonight. They're my countrymen. I'm an Aboriginal man. I'm Yorta Yorta from the Murray River, or Dungala as we call it. And so tonight we're going to feature two Yorta Yorta people who were inducted into the honour roll last Wednesday. And so, yeah, it's going to be a beautiful show, I think. And I did, must confess, I did pre-record these interviews because I wanted to capture them while the induction and the ceremony was fresh in their mind. So, yeah, it's going to be a pretty interesting show.
Oh, you said that you've pre-recorded, Brian. I think we're hearing from Graham Atkinson first, yeah. Uncle Graham.
Yep. And the other person's Unni Walder Blow. Unni Walder is actually, again, nepotism sort of glaring at us, is my auntie. And at the top of the show, I'd also like to mention too that we will be talking about deceased people as part of this, so we just warn Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are tuned in. But I guess, yeah, Unni Walder, she lost her husband 2 years ago, and then she lost her son, Troy, last year. So we'd like to dedicate tonight's broadcast to their memory and the legacy that they left. Uncle Reg Blow was inducted into the Victorian Indigenous Honours Award back in 2012. He received the award just before he passed on, and this year Unni Walder received her award and was inducted. And so, yeah, she's got a fascinating story, a really amazing woman she is. And so tonight we'll talk to her, and we'll talk to Uncle Graham about their induction. But we'd like to kick off, I guess, with with Uncle Graham. I asked how he identifies, and this is what he had to say.
My identity is strongly Jajabarung, Yorta Yorta.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Could you describe for our listeners where Jajabarung and Yorta Yorta country exists?
Well, Jajabarung is central Victoria, goldfields. If you could imagine the area around Bendigo, mm-hmm. The goldfields. The best way I could describe it is the eastern boundary is the Campaspe that runs down to Rochester. And then it winds back up to Kyneton, and then it sort of follows the Great Divide across to Creswick before it then curves back towards our western boundary, which is then takes us, which includes Charlton, St. Arnold, right through to Bort, and just above Bort it swings back. That's Bort. Just above Bort is our northern boundary, mm-hmm. and then that Bort, that we share that boundary with Barapurap, and then that swings across back to around to Rochester, yep. and we share that common boundary with Yorta Yorta.
Mm-hmm. Last week you were enlisted onto the Victorian Indigenous Honour Rolls. Tell us about the awards night and what it was like to be awarded and placed on such a prestigious role.
Well, it was an honour and I felt privileged to be inducted that evening. And what was particularly pleasing for me is that I had my children, that is my older son, Mason, my daughter, Melanie, and my younger two boys, Kaya and Nika, when they presented me with my shield, they came up onto the stage with me. So it was a proud moment, Brian.
Yeah.
So I felt very proud that I was sharing that that honour with my family and also friends who I knew in the audience that were also on that journey with me when I achieved all those things that were recognised as part of my induction.
I guess as part of the induction onto the honour roll, they've highlighted your work around native title and land justice within Victoria, but what are the, I guess, some of the other aspects that they've drawn out and celebrated as part of your induction?
My advocacy for social justice, and that was an important part of my early career when I got involved in Aboriginal affairs back in the 70s when I began my studies down here in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And I became involved with the local Aboriginal community service network back in those early days, and that was, you know, the it was called then the Victorian Aboriginal Co-op, which was a housing cooperative.
In Smith Street,
In Smith Street, yeah, 109, I think it was.
Yep.
108 Smith Street. The building's still there to this day. But that was a real nerve centre for Aboriginal community politics and community-based services in those early days. And I was elected onto the board of that cooperative that ran that centre. And I also then became involved with Camp Chungwai as a secretary. And then when we first set up Camp Chungwai, and then later as a director, and then after that I became chair of it. But and then the Victorian Legal Service.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of the Victorian Aboriginal Health Service then, and I became a member of the service back in those early days, and then became a after I completed my studies as a social worker, was employed as the senior social worker with the newly formed Victorian Aboriginal Childcare Agency.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that part of my career working in the Aboriginal community-based organisation sector, I think, was a recognition of the work that I'd done in the social justice area.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, my work in the land justice area was an area that I was also recognised for the work that I'd done there. And that really came right through to the enactment of the Victorian Traditional Owner Settlement Act.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time working with other activists and community people in finding an alternative way to resolve the outstanding native title claims.
Yeah.
Some of them had been on the books for 16 years. And as you know, I'm Yorta Yorta man.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved with the claim with my brother Wayne and Margaret Briggs and others,
mm-hmm.
In the very first Aboriginal land rights claim for the Yorta Yorta back in the early 1980s, and then with Wayne, Margaret and others helped to steer that towards a native title claim, mm-hmm. in the early 1990s when the Native Title Act was passed.
Yep.
But as you know, Brian, our claim wasn't successful, the Yorta Yorta claim.
The odds were against us, yes.
The odds were against the Yorta Yorta. And so I learned a lot from that, though, that there needed to be a better way of resolving these native title claims that had banked up, you know. So that took me down the path of looking at alternative agreement-making mechanisms. And that analysis and process of exploring alternative ways to resolving native title then led me to lobbying and campaigning for what we call a alternative agreement-making procedure that involved traditional owner groups, and in my case then was the Judge Aburung, negotiating a outcome of their native title claim directly with the state government and not having to rely on the federal court.
Yeah. Take me back to the, I guess, the time when the cooperative was being established, because it was, I guess, a very important time in the history of Aboriginal Victoria, and particularly Gertrude Street in Fitzroy. But the cooperative spawned, like you said, organisations like Camp Jungai and the Housing Board. What was it like to be involved with that late 70s movement that was about, you know, Aboriginal control of Aboriginal affairs, and it was very much reliant on volunteering, I guess, whereas now we've got, I guess, a state affairs package that sort of involves, I guess, giving organisations funding and you know, allowing them to have some sense of control over the communities. What was it like to be part of that change or that movement or that shift in Indigenous affairs in the state of Victoria?
Look, it was a great opportunity, and I liken that period, that's the 70s, I liken that period to when community development and it was, you know, Gertrude Street and Smith Street just around the corner from the health service, that's where the co-op was. It was a nerve centre for community development and emerging community organisations, and it was a hotbed of ideas. It was a vibrant period of, you know, exchange of ideas around how social action could be delivered, and that, you know, using those approaches, that is community development, community organisation, social action, all of those important tools to win greater rights for Aboriginal people and get greater recognition of the needs of Aboriginal people and the disadvantage that Aboriginal communities all across Victoria, but particularly in Melbourne, around Gertrude Street, were suffering. And It was a great period, and I learned a lot through that experience that put me in good stead in later years to be able to contribute to my community's advancement.
Hi, this is Kathy Freeman, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
To bring us back to 2014 and Aboriginal affairs in this country, what do you think are some of the shortcomings that exist nationally at the moment?
Yeah, I think the shortcomings that I still have sensed lately is that it's very hard to get a unified voice among Aboriginal groups. I think we had it back in the 70s and 80s. It fragmented a bit in the 90s, and as you pointed out earlier, Brian, when these statutory bodies or state departments were set up, it did change the landscape, the political landscape for Aboriginal people. So what I see is that I think that fragmentation process, as opposed to the, you know, Aboriginal voice being unified across as many areas as possible, I think that has suffered. I think the other shortcomings, you know, the state departments or the state bodies that fund Aboriginal affairs now and community groups has tended towards establishing the silo mentality, so that organisations that have been successful in getting support and funds from the funding providers, and these are government departments,
mm-hmm.
has tended to set them up as silos rather than, you know, vibrant, thriving networks,
yep.
community network systems where, you know, back in Smith Street at 108 and just around the corner at the health service in Gertrude Street, and then just down the road from that, the legal service, there was always a hive of activity going on
mm-hmm.
between those three different services, and, you know, they were very supportive of each other, and that's what I think is lacking at the moment, Brian, is that thriving and healthy community service network that we need to, you know, bring back and revive, that rather than seeing people operating in silos and just looking after their own little empires.
Is there anything else you might want to say before?
Look, the only thing I'd like to say, Brian, is that, you know, I was recognised as part of the induction for the contribution that I made to the community here in Victoria, and also I now contribute on a national stage in the other roles that I have at that level.
Mm-hmm.
But I did point out at the dinner last Wednesday night that I didn't do all that on my own. I was very fortunate to have a strong family, and that includes my immediate and my wider extended family network. Also, the community that supported me, the Aboriginal community that supported me, my friends and peer group that travelled alongside me in that journey
mm-hmm.
that resulted in all those things that I was recognised for and achieved.
Yep.
So I'm very grateful for that support that I was able to gain, and I'll never forget that. So when I think at the dinner on Wednesday, I made the point of saying how proud I was to be able to share that achievement with all those people that were part of my journey. And that's still a continuing journey, as you know, Brian.
Yep.
And those same people and new people that have come on board, I really appreciate the support that they've given me to be able to, you know, serve my community the way I have.
Well, thanks for your time, Unc, and I guess, yeah, again, congratulations on the award. All the best with your future endeavours, and, yeah, it's been really lovely chatting to you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, and, yeah, all the best too, mate.
That was Graham Atkinson, a Victorian Aboriginal man from Yorta Yorta Country and Jarjarung Country. He was inducted into the Victorian Indigenous Honours Roll last Wednesday. You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos with Emma and Brian.
Hey, this is Jess Mowboy, proud to be heard on the beautiful Joy 94.9.
You're on Lefty Pinkos with Brian and Emma, and tonight we've been speaking to a couple of inductees from last week's Victorian Indigenous Honour Roll. We've already heard from Graham Atkinson, and next up we're going to hear from Walda Blow. And Brian began by asking her who she is and how she identifies.
I'm Walda Blow, and I'm originally from Cummeragunja. I'm a Yorta Yorta woman, also Wimba Wimba elder. Yes, and I grew up at Cummeragunja.
And last night you were awarded as part of the Victorian Indigenous Honour Roll. Tell us about the award and how was that experience last night?
Well, I was very honoured to receive the award. As I spoke last night when I received the award, is that we all have a responsibility in our community, and we all come with some expertise in what area we come in. and mine was homelessness. And so I was quite honoured because I wasn't looking for any award. I just wanted to achieve the things that I set out for to make things better for our young people, as we elders of for years have set the foundation for today's generation, you know.
And you've got a pretty interesting background in life. Can you tell us about your upbringing and your formative years?
I'm a Yorta Yorta woman, also Wimba Wimba elder. Yes, and I grew up at Kamaragunja. I was born at Echuca, and my mother died when I was quite young, leaving four of us children. And I grew up with my grandparents and with my three brothers, Barney, Colin and Roy, and myself. And Barney was 9, Colin was 7, and Roy was 3, and I was 4. 3 or 4 months old when our mum died. And my nan and grandpa read us at Kamaragunja and done a wonderful job. And she wasn't a young woman when she took the four of us. And she played a big role in being like a mother to us. And I grew up at Kamara. I went to school at Kamaragunja. And Kamaragunja was such a lovely community to grow up in. I had a very good childhood at Kamara. Everyone supported each other. We all got on well. We ate each other. It was just such a beautiful environment. And we all, the other women cared about us as well, you know. So it was such a beautiful place to grow up in. I wouldn't have wanted any other way.
And as a teenager, you moved to Melbourne.
When I was 13, Brian, my nan died then, and that sort of left us homeless. And you don't realise you're homeless because you have such good extended family, because I lived with the good aunties, and God bless them, they were good aunties, you know, good to us. And so my brother got married, Colin, and this is how we were so close, and he gave us a home. I was at a home with Colin and Faye, and also his other brothers, Roy and Barney, which is so wonderful. And so when I was ready to leave Kamaragunja, I came down to Melbourne with the consent of my dad, and I actually worked in factories for a while, and then I waited till I was 18 and went into nursing. And I loved being in Melbourne and made some good friends down here, you know.
And you got married, like you met the love of your life. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, I think that's one of the best things that happened. I went to Queensland with some friends and I met Reg Blow. And we married, and he always wanted to come down to Victoria and try the fruit picking. We done that and stayed on, and then we came to Melbourne and moved out to Dandenong, where we had 3 children there, and he got a job at the Gas and Fuel. And even then, it was still a battle for Aboriginal people. And we never got our break until 1971, when we got involved with the Aboriginal community in Dandenong. Some of the people was asking for a hostel in Dandenong, and so we got involved in working towards the hostel. And then I was asked by the director of Aboriginal Affairs in those days, by Reg Worthy, asked me would I manage the boys' hostel. And I moved into that hostel with 4 children, and I had domestic come in to work with me, which made it a lot easier for me. And I managed a hostel with boys in those days, and it was boys that went on to apprenticeships, and they came from the Lionel Rose hostel in Warwell. They finished 4th form, and so they was able to go on to apprenticeships. So that was a pretty exciting thing, and that was the only time I was paid in a paid position in Aboriginal Affairs. And so I've never sort of looked back from there. We just kept going on and on then. You know, it was sort of an opening for Aboriginal people to go forward. And I think that came from the 67 referendum, where we're starting to demand self-determination, self-management. Because Uncle Reg worked for the Gas and Fuel. He also was a union member. Mm-hmm. And so we just went on from there. But it was a battle. And I was so proud to sit with some of the women at meetings, like Auntie Marge Tuckamore, Jackamoss, Elizabeth Hutton. I can go on and name a lot of them, you know. And they were, we come from a very good line of strong women. And as I said, we set the foundations for our young ones, you know, who has it much easier than we did, you know. No matter what I had done in my life and where I was, I was always concerned and wanted to work with homelessness.
That's Walda Blow, Yorta Yorta woman, who was inducted into the Victorian Indigenous Honours Roll last Wednesday. You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9, and that was Beggar Man by Archie Roach. And it was Brian's turn for the live read tonight. I think he did an excellent job. Now we're going to get back into Brian's interview with Walda Blow.
Could you just tell our listeners a little bit about who Auntie Marge Tucker was? Because she's a very important woman in Aboriginal affairs.
Yes, she was. Auntie Marge Tucker was a very strong woman, even though she was, you know, she was taken away from her mum, from Moonacullah she was taken from, and just at the age of 13, and she didn't return to her people until she's about 21, and she's a very strong advocate for her people. And she was just an amazing woman. She came and used to talk in the streets of Bourke Street and that on Aboriginal rights and how her people were treated. And the only people that the union really supported are the Marge and the communists. And they were the only ones that gave her that opening. And she took advantage of that and went on further and demanded to have a voice and spoke with the government people and fought for the rights of her people. And she went on to other things like the Lousy Little Sixpence is a very, well, it's a good education for people to see, isn't it, that movie? And I used to sit with them when I was only young, in my 30s, at meetings, and they had the Aboriginal Affairs in King Street then, and Reg Worthy, who was the director of Aboriginal Affairs, was the director there then. It is a very interesting journey, Brian. It wasn't easy. It was very, very hard for us, you know, because we weren't really there, you know. But we wouldn't have been able to do a lot of this without people like Marge Tucker, the strengthener, you know.
And you've managed the Marge Tucker Hostel for over 21 years.
I ended up at a hostel then. I just finished working at the Synod of Victoria, the Uniting Church, where I transferred properties to Aboriginal people. And I worked there for 9 years, and then this position came up at Marge Tucker. And they asked would I manage it, and I said I'd do it for 2 years. They ended up staying for 20. But I really loved the Marge Tucker because that's where my passion was. I went in with my, as I said, I felt I had a responsibility to girls that were homeless and vulnerable, and I ended up staying for 21 years. It's we provided a service for girls. It was 7 beds, and I had 3 staff, 3 youth workers, and a bookkeeper, and. Yeah, so we encourage those girls to go on to independent living when they come into our service. They're there until they're ready to go on to independent living. And a service we provided, like the hostel cares for the vulnerable girls, and we provided them with a safe and a culturally respected environment and helped them to develop and heal while they was in our service. And I think that's a pretty important thing. Look, Marge Tucker is a very small organisation, but it's a very, very important organisation for our young Aboriginal women.
What are you up to nowadays?
Well, I retired now from Margaret Tucker Hostel, mm-hmm. and I hope I've done my work, my job well, just to care for my people. And it's up to the younger generation now. As I said before, the foundations are set, and we work very hard for those foundations. You know,
Worrell, your daughter, is now working at Marge Tucker Hostel.
Yes, Worrell is now the manager at the hostel, and it'll be done differently from me. You know, And we always knew that it would be done differently. But in those days, that's the only way we was able to run those hostels, you know, so we can get ourselves settled into caring for our people and the self-determination and to manage our own kids, you know, and working along with the Department of Human Services. But we had to be in control. We had to work with our children. And now it's going to be different. So because the young ones have had the opportunity to have that education, and we can step back now and say, well, we've done our job now. It'll be going on differently, and it'll probably go on to a higher level.
How was it last night at the award night?
Well, I just couldn't get over it. You know, when you work with people and you know that they're doing a lot in their communities, and I just couldn't believe the things that they'd done and the things that they achieved. And even though I worked with some of those people and sat on committees with those people, and to hear it and see it in writing and then see it on screen and seeing them going up for the awards, it just made me so proud. How the things that we achieved and then in the 20, 30 years that we had to get ourselves together and to get things in order. My grandfather, Herbert Walker, he really cared about the environment. You know, when I was nominated for, when I was put up for the Murray-Darling Basin, I was thinking, oh, God, I can do without another committee. But I thought of Herbert Walker, my grandfather, your great-grandfather, and how he cared for the waterways and how he cared about everything there at Cumbra. He couldn't stand people throwing things into the river and all that type of thing. He wanted it clean, and it always worried him how people treated the waterways, because he said it was a very spiritual thing. It took care of us, and that's how we call it the cultural flows, which people can't understand. You know, it's a cultural flow. It takes care of us. He brought us up to respect the land and the waterways, and I took it on for I hold that, I honour that position I had on the Murray-Darling Basin for him in his name. And the other thing is that it only involved Aboriginal people in those days to go on and to help them to care for an environment. I think it would have been a lot better off today. Only they weren't never involved, and that's why I wanted to go on to the Murray-Darling Basin. It came around. It had to come to all those years that somebody then, you know, that Aboriginal people can step up and be on the Murray-Darling Basin and help people to make decisions about the environment.
And last night at the awards, a big part of you receiving the award was honouring your grandmother. Tell us about your grandmother.
Yeah, look, she was a very powerful woman. She always stood up for what was right, and she's a wonderful woman. She delivered so many children on Cumbra Gunja there. She delivered most of her grandchildren as well, and she delivered all those, the Morgan family, like Auntie Merle, Jackamice and all their family, and some of the people across the river, the non-Aboriginal people she delivered. And while she was delivering children over there, the children on Cumbra Gunja weren't, and the people there weren't treated very nice, you know, and threatened to be taken away. And she was just a wonderful, strong woman and a very strong spirit. And she was born at Corranderk. She came from Corranderk. She married a Yorta Yorta man, Herbert Walker. Mm-hmm. And her name was Hamilton, Florence Hamilton. Even back in those days, her mother, Annie Hamilton, we have record where she was also involved in fighting for the rights and how Aboriginal people were treated way back then. So I come from a very long line of all these very strong women. Even Mariah Day on my mother's side, you know, was a very strong, liberated woman, you know. I just can't get over how those women and what they done, you know. And they reared families. Nanny reared her own family and then reared us, their children, you know, her grandchildren.
Joy 94.9 is Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station. Now, you've got a few gay friends. Do you want to just tell us what your views are on gay people?
Well, I have a lot of gay friends. I really support them. I love and respect them. Respect my gay friends, and I support them in every way. They're our They're our people and they're our children. They're God's children. I'm just so proud of the Walker family. Everything I'd done and the awards that I did receive, I'd done it for the Walker family. And I think of proud Papa Walker, who's Herbert Walker. I would be so proud of the things that my brother Colin and I have done and achieved. You know, Colin's was born at Cumra Gunge. He never left Cumra. He lives on the place. He worked on the place, you know. And that's how all the Walkers did. They never left a Cumra Gunge. They loved it and kept it going.
You're on Lefty Pinko's on Joy 94.9 with Brian and Emma, and that was Walter Blow, who was inducted last week into the Victorian Indigenous Honour Roll. And it was great to hear her views towards the end there on gay people.
It's quite cute, actually, Emma, because she's like, oh, do I call her auntie or should I say auntie? And it's kind of like, I think with a view around gays and lesbians like that, I think you could probably call her auntie.
Well, that's good to know. I'm interested to hear from you, Brian. What does this mean to you? I mean, you talked a little bit about the beginning of the show, about the honour roll and that it came about in 2011. What does it mean to you to see your elders recognised like this?
It's a very profound thing. Like, I mean, you look at how we honour different types of people or I guess things within our society. Like, I'm thinking of, like, say, Anzac, how we honour that tradition and those that fought in war, for example, or how we might honour Australian of the Year. Like, Adam Goods is the Australian of the Year at the moment. And I guess this is just a really nice localised, Victorian-based example of honouring really amazing work and lives that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders that they've made contributions to our community, be it within the Indigenous community or, you know, more broadly. And so, yeah, it was a nice experience to have a chat to Tony Walder and to Uncle Graham about why they got the award and their lives, because they are really quite profound. And I think, you know, something that only Walder said in that interview was this, that, you know, we had 20 to 30 years to basically take from this watershed moment in Australian history where in 67 Aboriginal people were given rights or basically being included into federal legislation. And so it was 30 years effectively to basically turn the tide and to make sure that services and rights were adhered to and acknowledged within the Aboriginal community. So, yeah, really important stuff. But yeah, I guess, one of the most precious things that I was able to capture as part of that whole process of talking to Annie Walder and Uncle Graham was I rang Annie Walder to say, look, I'd really love to interview you for Joy because you've got a really good story to tell. And my little cousin, Jakala, she answered the phone, and she's going to be the next Kathy Freeman, I think. She's a sports star. She's mad about sports. And I said, oh, actually, you went to the award night, didn't you? Tell me, how was it, you know, watching your gran get that award? And she sort of ummed and ahed and stuff, and it was, yeah, a bit of a clunky interview, but she said, look, I'll put Tess on and you can chat to her. And Tess is a really quiet young girl. And so I said, look, can I interview you for Joy, and can you say a few words about your grandmother? And this is what she said, and I think it is absolute gold. We've got on the line Tess, who was at the Victorian Indigenous Honours Awards last night, and she was actually there to watch her grandmother, Walter Blow, receive an award and be inducted onto the honour roll. How are you going there, Tess?
I'm good, thank you.
Tell us, what was it like to see your nan awarded an award as part of last night's ceremony?
I felt very proud to see my nan get an award because I know how hard she has worked throughout her life to achieve the things she has done.
As a young Aboriginal girl who is, I guess, on the verge of womanhood, what does it mean to you to see your nan honoured in this way?
I think it gives us and me and a lot of other young people so many opportunities and just really opens up, like, what we're capable to do because we see our elders and what they've done, and it gives us more courage and determination to achieve goals.
If you could describe your nan to our listeners, how might you do that, Tess?
I would describe my nan as a very hard worker. She's very determined and does so much good for the right reasons.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for your time, Tess.
Thank you.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy.
Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.